I can accept that the algorithm thinks I missed this thing from 2021. I probably did. It wasn't a great year.
Were you blessed by the algorithm this week?
Yes. Yes. Well, it depends on, do you mean, did I see things that were interesting and relevant? Yes. But also, did I see things that were so relevant they went right to my soul and made me want to vomit because something on the internet like victimized me personally? Also, yes.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I am your host, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
I'm your host, Jessica Michaels. I use she, they.
How you feeling today, Jess?
Still they.
All right. Well, today we are talking about the lasting effects of being a gifted kid, because we should probably actually talk about being a gifted kid sometimes.
Yes.
So specifically, we found, or you found, a BuzzFeed article about a bunch of people's experiences as a former gifted kid and how it kind of shaped them as people. And I think we both picked a couple that we really resonate with. How'd you get us started, Jess? Which one cut you to the quick?
Yeah, and I have to say, this article found me. It was something that came to me just in a list of topics that I get sent, and this one was there. So I was a little concerned then when I was reading these responses, and this one made me really consider my life. It says, some people described being great at coming up with ideas, but having a really hard time implementing them or finishing things. And then the quote from the user, because all of these, of course, since it's BuzzFeed, are taken from various Reddit users. In this one said, is one of your top five strength finders assessment attributes ideation and can't get stuff done because my focus is totally on the next best idea? Absolutely. And this is something that I, especially since I have gone full time out on my own to do my own business, I have found that I am constantly going from idea to idea to idea, and I have great ideas about all of the things to do next. The problem is doing any of them. I am much better at generating all of the brilliant ideas, but when it comes down to the actual middle, the part where you do the things, that constantly eludes me. And this is not the first time this has happened. This is something that has been my whole life, which is why this one really, I had never put that together as being a gifted thing before. But that is something I've always had trouble with, is the actual doing the things and not just thinking of great things to do.
Yeah, we've got a couple of video series we need to make actual videos for.
It turns out to be a content creator, you actually have to create content.
Yeah, like every day. You gotta make more stuff, like all the time.
You can't just think of the stuff.
Yep, no. I mean, if you make enough stuff, you can think of the stuff and pay someone else to make the stuff, but someone still has to mix the stuff, you know? The one that hit me was about how a lot of gifted kids actually skipped grades, and how, like, that was apparently necessary for academic reasons, but for social and psychological reasons, it's terrible, and emotional reasons, it's terrible. Like, I wasn't actually skipped, but I was, like, pushed ahead, so I wasn't like a full year younger than everybody, but I was like, you know, half a year, 9 months.
Because you were kind of on that cusp, right? Where you probably could have waited another year to go to school and still be in the same age and grade range as everybody. So instead of being a little older than everybody, you were a little younger than everybody.
Well, and add into that lifelong autoimmune things with my metabolism and just always being smaller than everybody, and like my organs not being terribly good at like absorbing nutrients and things. And then not hitting androgenic puberty until I was like 16 or 17, not starting estrogenic puberty until I was 34. So all of that kind of stuff really made me pretty much always the youngest person in the room. And then also being one of the smartest people in the room and the youngest person in the room, people kind of just leave you alone. Not out of like malice, I think, I hope, but more of just like, I don't connect with this kid in the slightest. Like this, we have no shared experience. Like specifically, I remember being in a calculus class as like a freshman or sophomore or whatever, and it was just full of seniors. And I did not know a single one of them outside of that specific class. And so I wasn't friends with any of them. Like there was the one, you know, chronically in trouble kid who like slept through most of the class. He would talk to me. But then a lot of that was because he was taking like a cool sci-fi reading class, which was like a remedial class. And I would read his book and tell him what happened in it at the end of class. Because neither of us were paying attention to the teacher, him because he was a burnout, and me because I didn't need to. So I read Starship Troopers and then told him what happened in the assigned reading section because he was napping through class.
So our gifted kid background is a little different because I was pulled out and sent to a different school for a gifted program. And then after that, I was in specific gifted classes. You were sort of more mainstreamed still, but pushed younger.
Yes and no. You'll be amazed to find I actually had more chaos in my young life than you did. So when I suddenly got hauled from one of the best high schools in the state to one of the lower ends of the middle, I was suddenly uprooted in how the structure of the classes worked, where in the really good high school, you would take physics, then chemistry, then biology. So you're kind of learning like what molecules do, and then you learn how molecules interact, and then you learn how lots of molecules interacting happens. The high school I wound up at did the exact opposite, which makes less sense. Which is here's biology, and now here's chemistry, and now here's physics. And like the stuff where you need to understand the chemistry to understand the biology, well, we'll just leave that till later. Which generally just means that no one actually understands it because they don't remember what they were supposed to be learning.
That's how my school did it too. Biology, chemistry, physics. I took biochem because even though I was not good at math or science, my parents thought that, of course, a two-year program that fills math and science requirements, it has a bunch of work over the summer and is, in fact, biochemistry, that is the perfect place for me to be. So I was in kind of a weird group, but that's what everybody else did is biology, chemistry, physics. I had no idea that that was a terrible way to do that.
Yeah, once that was explained to me, it made a lot of sense. And I was in that same school system, the lower crappy one, before I got moved to this really good school system. So I actually had to do a bunch of summer school classes so that I could be ready for the good classes in high school, which then were completely wasted, which is pretty funny. But the day I got to the crappy high school, the person who would have been my counselor was out that day. She was a really good counselor. Actually, my friend's mom. Well, I later became his friend and then realized. But the absolute worst imaginable guidance counselor that you could get, like the guy who told the valedictorian of my class, who went to Harvard and then straight up became a lawyer, he told her that she should just go to the local community college because it'd be the same. That was the valedictorian of my class. So that dude was in charge of assigning me my classes, and I had no idea what was going on or what I should be advocating for because I still don't know how to do that.
What sport did he coach? Because that does not sound like, I mean, that sounds like somebody who was a coach first and a counselor second.
I have no idea. You'll be surprised to find I was not terribly sporty.
Well, neither was I. Neither was I, for sure. So I'm wondering if, because of our different, you know, because we had different experiences as far as how we were treated when it came to being gifted, but we still struggled with connecting with anybody our age. Like me, I connected with the people inside my gifted class better than anybody, but I still would rather sit with the teacher and still talk to the teacher. I can't say that I was particularly good at connecting with the people in my class, but connecting with anybody outside of my little bubble, forget it. That just didn't happen. And it's interesting that even in a situation where you were still kind of part of the, I have to stop calling it general population because that really does make school sound like prison, which is really apt for a lot of us.
Better than saying civilian population.
Yeah, but you got, you know, even though you were in theory in with more people given that opportunity to connect with your peers more, that was still something that you struggled with.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I'm still conflicted if it's because of the queer stuff, the trans stuff, the gifted stuff, or the neurodivergent stuff, or just all of it in a great big ball, which I kind of see it, Al, as one great big ball. I never had like a set lunch table. Like I always kind of kept trying different groups and it just never worked out particularly well. But then when I was a junior, that's like the second to last. Yeah. My high school was like, hey, we're going to start pushing AP classes because that will get us better funding, which tells you all you need to know about America. So like, if you think you can take an AP class, take an AP class next year. So all of a sudden there was tons of people, and by tons, I mean probably a couple dozen, taking these AP classes. And so they suddenly offered what we called AP lunch, which was study hall lunch. But you didn't have to go, I almost said general populace, you didn't have to go with the general population or the civilians into the giant, terrifying, very bright, very loud, autistic, you say. You didn't have to go to the regular lunchroom. You just went to this little like teacher conference room.
Oh, it sounds so great.
And the only caveat was that you had to work on school stuff. But that there wasn't even like a teacher in there or like anybody that I remember. It was just a handful of my fellow super smart people. And we would just quietly sit near each other and work on our stuff or like share the understanding that we had of the lesson we just had, where it's like, I have no idea what that guy was talking about. And like, oh, it's this and this and this and this and this and this. And we really spoke each other's language. And I was really comfortable at lunch, I think for the first time in probably a decade.
I'm just imagining like being able to bring in whatever book, because, you know, most people aren't going to look at whatever you're reading unless it's like super, super age inappropriate, but you probably could have brought any book in and just read during that time.
Lots of people did.
That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. No, it was really good. The only downside was that it was really hard if you were going to buy your lunch at school, because then you had to go through like the lunch line and pay for everything and then walk halfway across the school and then get back into the room. And by then you were just like running out of time. So they started doing a thing where they were selling like sub sandwiches in a little plastic container. And we had three lunch periods that went over the course of like an hour and a half. And if you were in B or C lunch, those sandwiches were like gone by the time you got there. So I actually worked out a system where I would just pay a friend of mine who had A lunch, you know, a certain amount every week. And she would buy a sub while she was at A lunch, and then she'd go drop it in her locker. And then when it was time for me to go to lunch, which was C lunch, I would just go grab that sandwich out of her locker and go straight to AP lunch. So it was, I don't want to say it was the beginning of my understanding of how to ignore certain rules entirely, but it was certainly a formative time in that pattern.
Was that also the beginning of your willingness to eat food well past its optimal holding temperature, because a sub sandwich sitting in a locker for a couple of hours doesn't seem particularly safe. That seems like that might have hit the danger zone in terms of temperature and bacterial growth.
No, it wasn't a couple of hours. It was like maybe a half hour. Like the three lunch periods were all like a half hour, and they were spaced over the course of an hour and a half ish. You know, maybe less time than that. I really don't remember. That is probably for a reason. But that was the other thing that I really resonated with in that article was, they felt alienated from their peers. They were too young and felt alienated a different way. But understanding that you don't need to follow certain rules. And the specific example was somebody saying, like, I got such good grades, I could just, you know, screw off and not do my first class of the day and no one would care. And then I later went on to get a degree in math, and then I got a degree in physics, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I think you hit a very specific set of circumstances with a very specific set of skills and mindset that this doesn't work for everybody.
Like, I was like that my senior year, but it took till my senior year for me to have that level of confidence, you know, because I took summer school so that I wouldn't have to take like government and econ my senior year. So the only classes I had were like AP Spanish and then two choirs and then an acting self-study. So yeah, I barely had to go at all. I even got there, and I'm considering the amount of rule following I implement in my daily life. It is impressive that I was actually able to get myself to pull something like that off, but I really wanted to sleep in.
Yeah, you are like a pathological rule follower. Mm-hmm. I'm more the PDA, the pathological demand avoidance kind of, like, I will follow your rules if they make sense. And I will do the thing if you give me a good reason to do it and I feel like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that that got me in trouble a number of times. But for the most part, like the commenter was saying, you find out that there, how'd Terry Pratchett put it? There's no actual mallet that people will hit you over the head with if you break the rules. If you ignore the rules 50% of the time, people will just shrug and get over it. Like, how would we even enforce this? Or like, is this worth my effort to do this? And if the answer is no, that's not a real rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the fence is not electrified, I'm gonna step over it, you know?
So going, there's a fence. That means we're supposed to not be over there.
There's a fence. That's all that means.
You are definitely more willing to work. Sounds like slightly outside the rules. It sounds like in school, that's really where you were, was kind of slightly outside the rules. You weren't full on anarchy yet, but you were, you were leaning towards that direction. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of gifted and neurodiversity, I don't know when specifically gifted became part of the neurodivergent conversation. I know for me, it was more of, hey, it looks like just about everybody you were in class with now is diagnosed as ADHD or autistic, or both. And so we were able to see very quickly, especially when I started working with more and more and more people, that there was definitely, at least anecdotally from the populations I work with, a strong connection between gifted kids and neurodivergent. Now, from, you know, in most of the literature I'm reading, gifted is its own category within neurodiversity, which I think makes a lot of sense, because clearly that's a brain that works differently than many other people's in terms of knowledge acquisition and processing and analysis and things like that. So it makes total sense to me. I do know, you know, it does make me think about what would have been the best approach for either of us in any of those situations, because it sounds like from as we talk about these things more, pulling me out of class and having me be isolated didn't particularly help, because I was physically isolated from my peers, but then still socially, which was always going to happen, you were not pulled away, but you were still socially isolated until you found that little group of AP. I still love the idea of AP lunch. I think I would have done really well at AP lunch until you found that group of people, you know, that you really related with. You were still not connecting socially with the other people in your grade. So is there any system that would have worked so that we could integrate successfully with our peers who were not also gifted? Or is that just, was that just never going to happen?
I don't like the conclusion that I've come to, but the conclusion I have mostly come to is that if you are neurodivergent, if you are gifted, autistic, ADHD, what have you, the best chance for having a social life and having meaningful connections with people is to find other, not like-minded, but like-minded, like-brained people, other neurodivergent people, because I get along with people. It's one of like my main skills, is that lots of people think that I'm their friends, and lots of people are friends with me, but I cannot stand most people for more than an hour. However, when I run into the right kind of compatible neurodivergent, I can sit next to that person for 10 straight years, like you and I have so far, and hopefully another 50 years after that. And really, it seems to be the pattern that if you want community and if you want to have other people who are close to you, you kind of have to find other neurodivergent people. And even looking back on, you know, I would use my people skills and my sense of humor and my sense of punning really seems to, people like it because it means I'm paying attention to what they're saying. And it's like, yeah, part of my subroutine is doing that. But the other part is, you know, coming up with puns.
I'm going to say my love of your punning ability, we're going to put that in quotes. I love, I enjoy your puns because they are brilliant. They are brilliant. I will say that. But the thing about a pun is, even at its most brilliant, it's still going to hurt. Right. It's still mm-hmm. going to elicit a groan at best. So, yes, I do love your puns.
The issue is that a good pun is a linguistic twist that you did not see before. And so the initial sensation of hearing and understanding a pun is noticing that there's a connection between two things that you previously did not know. And finding out all of a sudden that you're wrong in a sense, and that someone else is right, and that they figured this out before you, that little connection being formed is kind of unpleasant. But at the same time, we've recognized that it's clever and it's kind of funny, because a connection that you didn't know was there, but that can be made, is the basis of a joke. And so it's a linguistic twist. It's screwing up your expectations, and language is very, very much embedded in our brains as how we think and how we experience things. So puns are supposed to be a little bit upsetting, but you don't find them all upsetting. Sometimes they're really good.
Often they're really good. So really, a pun is like your subtle way of saying you're wrong and I'm right.
I mean, when you put it that way.
No wonder I have such a reaction.
Well, yeah, we all hate being told we're wrong. But that's not what I present it as. The whole reason that I'm making the pun is to show, well, it's because I do it automatically. But it's also to show that, like, I'm paying attention to what you're saying. And, like, I am invested in comprehending and onboarding what you are saying. Mm-hmm. And the same with just with lots of jokes and wordplay. And so I did that a lot with teachers. Hey, I did that when I was in a psych ward for better part of a week. Like, I ingratiated myself amongst the authority, and that's part of what kind of set me apart, because I couldn't like you said, you'd rather sit with a teacher. And that's because you've been an adult who was short, and now you're just an adult who's slightly less short. And I've always been kind of this weird outsider jestery person who my brain thinks differently than most adolescents seem to. And so I could get along with and ingratiate myself with the authority, and that would give me some more leeway. Because it's like, hey, I'm not going to be a problem, you know? Like, I'm here to help. I'm going to be over there. Y'all have fun. I'm going to be over there.
I'm interested to find out. So did you find, like, now when you get along with people, do you still find that it's kind of segregated? Like, do you get along better with neurodivergent women than neurodivergent men? Or what about neurodivergent NBs?
Well, I married you, so...
Yes.
That count? No, yeah, I really seem to, without trying, just surround myself with neurodivergent non-binary people.
I think even more than neurodivergent women, you really have hit the NBs, like, really strongly. That is just your category, is the non-binaries. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I think about that from time to time, and I still don't know what's up with it. I think it's because I present quite femme and I look quite femme, but also, like, I have the knowledge of how to replace an engine block. And, you know, I don't think in a traditionally socialized femme way. I also don't think in a particularly socialized masculine way.
Mm-mm.
So... I guess my brain and my thought patterns and a lot of my actions are more non-binary-ish, if we're going into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, I'll do the dishes and, you know, make a cake and, you know, knock together some icing out of whatever we happen to have on hand. But also I'll go change the oil in the car, and, like, I can fix the wiring in the bathroom. Like,
you also dyed the icing pink, I'll point out.
Well, yeah, it was for you.
I think it's funny because, you know, say when you, before you transitioned, when you came out, I, you know, made a list of all of the things that I loved about you, and none of them had anything to do with gender. And I think you and I, without me realizing it, did connect in, like, a non-binary kind of way, because... Mm-hmm. Regardless of where you were on your journey, like, the super femme stuff, I don't connect with at all. I watched you twirl in a sundress for a very long time, and I realized, like, I've never been that excited about anything in my life. Like, never. I've never been excited about any of these. But I know women who are excited about these things, and, you know, they're outfits and their makeup and all of these things. So I think with neither one of us knowing it, we connected in a totally NB way even a decade ago.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, even at the very beginning of our relationship, we did not have traditional gender roles where, you know, you were much more the bread earner and I was much more the homemaker.
You were the bread maker. You made wonderful bread. You really did. Your sourdough, stellar. Banana bread, fantastic. Oh, that's interesting. I would love to see, you know, I kind of wish we had one of these generational studies where they follow a group of kids, you know, across their life, which are, of course, almost impossibly difficult to do. And they're very rare for that reason. But I wonder, now knowing what we know, how many of those people that we knew before or that we got along with before would be, you know, diagnosed ADHD or would be somewhere differently on the gender spectrum than they were when we knew them previously. You know, I think that's really fascinating. Of course, it does matter to the society they grew up around. I was in a gifted program in Southern Illinois in a more rural community. So I think there's less likely to be sort of gendery stuff happening than the group I was in outside of Chicago, when I grew up a little bit more, there's probably a lot more, freedom there. But it kind of sounds like what we're saying ultimately is that regardless of how these gifted programs are structured or not, we're going to relate to who we relate to because that's the way that our brains are made up. We're going to find our people and get along with them. And it's not that we're, and we're just probably not going to connect with people that aren't a part of that group, really, no matter what. It's not like an opposites attract situation. It's a, you're going to connect with the people that are your people, no matter how long it takes to find them, which I think is really interesting.
I guess it's like almost an argument for the gifted programs. Like as much as we hear horror stories about the gifted programs and as much as we experienced those horror stories, it kind of puts you together with the other neurodivergent people. And absolutely, yes, I do think back on close relationships I had or, people I dated for a long time and like, she was super, super autistic. Okay. And then you learn about a different thing and you go, that's what Mike had going on. Okay. I get it now. Mm-hmm. And like, you almost want to like reach out to them and be like, hey, I don't know if you know this about yourself.
Not that we diagnose, neither of us are clinicians. We do not diagnose, but it is part of the neurodivergent experience to informally diagnose anyone around you because you start to spot these traits in people. And certainly even being in quite young, raised in being called gifted, you are already in a practice of being labeled and dealing with labels of the people around you. So it's just sort of natural. You find your people. I would be really interested to find out from our listeners what their thoughts are on this and what their experience is like. Have you found that you connect with a certain group of people kind of no matter when that happened, or did you find the opposite, that you're able to connect with lots of different people outside of this gifted kid grouping, or if you're more on the messy adult side of things, which we certainly are at this point in our lives, same thing. Who do you connect with? And, do we think it would have made a difference how we were put together in groups when we were kids? So, because our experiences, even though we're different, we came to the same conclusion. We're still a very small sample size. So even though your opinion, Ellie, is of course of the utmost importance to me, and you are my study of one, and you are the most important subject, but we'll see what other people have to say.
Well, speaking of what other people have to say, we've started getting some lovely listener feedback. A couple of people talking about how this show has made them feel seen, about how they didn't know that other people had these kinds of experiences too, and we absolutely love it, and it gives us life and makes me want to, wake up early on a Monday morning to record this podcast. I'm aware it's not early when we're recording, but it's so I can wake up and do things and be coherent. Producer Matt just reminded me that it's 10 to noon right now. If you would like to contact us with any stories of your own, or if you have any ideas for future topics, you can reach us at giftedkidmessyadult@gmail.com. If you would like to support our podcast, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can do the same on YouTube at giftedkidmessyadult. Go ahead and subscribe and smash that bell icon, since none of us actually pay attention to those notifications anyway. And if you care to drop a comment in any of those videos with anything that you happen to relate to or ideas for future topics, we will absolutely read those and might even read them on air later. It occurs to me that we probably should have isolated a couple of things from one of those emails to talk about, but we can do that at our next recording. If people want to get a hold of you or support you, Jess, how can they do that?
They can go to my website at coachjessicamichaels.com and send me a message or sign up for a session with me. You can also see all of the stuff I have going on in terms of education. There's a Udemy course that is now available for everyone to take on neurodiversity, supporting neurodiversity in the workplace. So come check out my website.
Awesome. And if you're looking for me or some customized commercial video production, you can find me at lemichaelsproductions.com. Or if you'd like to support the show financially, you can find us on Patreon under Coach Jessica Michaels. That goes to all of our work supporting the neurodivergent community and offering as many free resources as we can alongside your paid coaching and free consultations, because the point is we want to help people. It'd be nice if we also made enough to stay housed, but that's a secondary thing.
We're working on that.
Yeah, we're working. It'll be fine.
Staying housed and taking our medicine would be even better.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, did we take morning meds? Yeah, okay. I think that'll just about wrap it up for this episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. We'll see you at the next one, and until then, take care of each other out there.
Bye.